All right. Well, thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be here. I'm glad some people have come. This is a bit of a wonky issue, we realize, and it's a little bit outside the norm of public health people, but we've discovered over the past few years that it's an important issue and an increasingly important issue, and it's something we have to get involved in if we're going to be able to do our jobs. So first, there are no relationships to disclose, I don't think, for me or anybody else on the panel. I wanted to start with a bit of a background on global tobacco control, because I think in this country we tend to get a little bit isolated and think of four oceans surrounding the United States. But the tobacco epidemic is a global epidemic, and contrary to what we might see in the United States, it's increasing around the world rather than decreasing. So while we've made great strides in the United States, the tobacco industry has gotten more and more rich, more and more powerful, and more people are getting addicted to tobacco. So a bit of a briefing on what's going on in the world. There are currently 1.2 billion smokers. About another 0.1 billion are non-combustible tobacco users in the world, and that number is rising fairly rapidly. That's leading to 6 million deaths per year presently, including about 600,000 people that die from exposure to secondhand smoke. That's about one person every 6 seconds. That figure is expected to go up to 8 million per year by 2030. 80% of those people will be in the developing world as opposed to the developed world. So the epidemic is moving south. The WHO estimates that in the 20th century, 100 million people died from tobacco-related diseases. That's more than all the wars combined in the greatest century of war in human history. That's a big figure, but the bigger figure is this one. If we don't do something drastic in this century, 1 billion people will die from tobacco-related diseases. 650 million of those people have not even been born yet. So 650 million people will be born, get addicted, and die early from tobacco this century unless we do something about it. And I like to think that the fates of those 650 million people are not sealed, and there's still time for us to do something. In the meantime, the tobacco industry, which is the vector of this disease, which makes tobacco somewhat unique among epidemics in the world, has consistently gotten richer and stronger. As the United States, Western Europe, Canada, and some other developed countries in the 80s and 90s realized and did something about the tobacco epidemic, the industry has moved to new markets to increase their sales. So in 2010, that's the last year we have full figures, the global tobacco industry had a revenue of $664 billion. When you throw numbers around that much, it's hard to realize what that means. That's two-thirds of $1 trillion, and to put that in perspective, the debt of the United States is about $14 trillion. So it's a massive number, a number that's inconceivable to most people. If they were a country, and that was their GDP, this would actually earn them a spot in the G20, I think just after Switzerland. They can buy and sell most of the developing countries that they work in, and sometimes do. In the United States, they spend $8.37 billion a year just on marketing. That's just here in a country where their marketing is restricted. They spend far more than that overseas. They spend a lot of money on lobbying in the U.S., and this is just the officially reported figures. This is the stuff they have to report, $26.6 million per year. And again, this is just what they have to report. This is the hard political money in the United States, $4.1 million in the last presidential election. We have no idea how much soft money was poured into campaigns because the Citizens United case meant that they don't have to report it. So it could be in the hundreds of millions of dollars. Just as one example, beyond the federal level, a few years ago when California was trying to pass an increase in their tobacco tax, it's estimated the tobacco industry threw $40 million into an anti-tax campaign and won. And that's why the California tax levels are so low. Fortunately, there is a global response to this, and it's called the WHO Framework Convention on Tobacco Control. And I should have said this in the beginning. If I ever use acronyms that people do not know, please stop me. I realize we're supposed to save questions until the end. But if I'm using acronyms that are making my points indecipherable, please just stop me and I'll explain it. WHO, of course, is the World Health Organization. This is the world's first and still only public health treaty. So it's a massive response on a global level. This came into force as of February of 2005. So we're coming up on the ninth anniversary of this coming into force. Presently, it's 177 parties, so that's 176 countries and the European Union in its entirety, has ratified this treaty and is obligated to implement the measures that are in the treaty. The treaty is a very comprehensive approach to tobacco control, and it was based on science, and it was based on years of research at the WHO and around the world. A lot of the measures that an ESCTC you will recognize as things that we work on very closely here in the United States, things like tax, things like smoke-free air, public education, and restriction of advertising. But there's also some things in there that we don't think about very often in the United States, or at least are not able to do much about. Tobacco industry interference is a big part of the ESCTC, and in fact, the way we look at it is, if you can't stop tobacco industry interference, you're never going to get very far on all the other measures. Another one that's in the ESCTC that's become increasingly important in the United States is ingredient regulation and ingredient disclosure. And the 2009 Act that gave FDA authority over tobacco will hopefully lead to greater progress on that in the United States. And the other big one that they worked on in the treaty is illicit trade in tobacco, which is outside of the trade we're going to talk about here, but is the subject of the only protocol to the ESCTC to date. Presently, this is a map of the ratification. The gray countries are the ones that have ratified. This map is a bit outdated. I'm not good enough at graphics to have fixed it. Tajikistan and the Czech Republic have ratified since this map came out. So you'll notice there's one giant holdout on the left that has signed the treaty but not ratified. And the other large population country that has not ratified is Indonesia, which has about 250 million people and one of the world's highest smoking rates. So during the ESCTC, trade was a hot issue. The negotiators recognized that trade could be a barrier to implementation of the ESCTC even then. And a number of proposals were put forward by the governments who were present. The governments who were present were all the entirety of the World Health Assembly, which is the group that oversees the World Health Organization. So virtually every country on Earth was a negotiator. Some of the proposals put health over trade. There was language in some of the proposals that said, in a conflict between an ESCTC implementation measure and a trade measure, health wins. Another group of countries, led by the United States, insisted that there needed to be explicit language in the treaty saying that in a conflict between trade and health, trade wins, and so putting profits over health. They argued about this endlessly, over six negotiating rounds and even in between the rounds. And in the end, the only way they could compromise was to say nothing. So if you look through the ESCTC, do a global search in the ESCTC text for trade, you will not find the word unless it is preceded by the word illicit. So they only talked about smuggling. They did not talk about legal trade in tobacco. This is the only thing that ended up in the treaty that has something to do with trade. And it ostensibly gives the parties the right to go further than the treaty, which was the idea of the Framework Convention to begin with. But you'll notice that bold wording at the end, that they can't go further unless it's in accordance with international law. It's hard to imagine an international law that they're talking about if they're not talking about trade. So that got snuck into the preamble. So the industry has been using trade law for decades to try to keep regulations down. But there are two styles. And the old style was started in the 80s and 90s, often at the behest of the United States. And that's under the GATT, which is the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, or the WTO, the World Trade Organization, which is what GATT became in 1994. Under those rules, only a country can sue another country for regulations that they think impede their trade. And so if an industry is upset over a foreign country's regulations, they have to get their government to go and intercede on their behalf and sue the other country. The United States used GATT and WTO rules several times in the 80s and early 90s, to force open markets by threatening trade sanctions against other countries. And the three examples I give here, Japan, South Korea, and Taiwan, they forced open all those markets to multinational tobacco corporations, and their prevalence rate for smoking shot up 10% in 1 year because of the marketing that came into those countries. There were also direct attacks on health regulations where instead of a threat of a lawsuit, the U.S. and some other countries took other countries directly to trade courts to force them to change their laws. Some of the earliest efforts by developing countries to address the tobacco epidemic got stymied by these trade cases. Since that time, since the early 90s, there have been three major changes in the way trade impacts health and tobacco control specifically. The first was an executive order under the Clinton administration, which said that we can't use government resources to encourage export of tobacco products. This was mirrored by an amendment to our budget bill called the Doggett Amendment, which basically has the same language. The second is the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, so a new paradigm in global tobacco control. And then the third, and that's largely what we'll talk about, is what's called Investor-State Dispute Settlement, and or ISDS. And my colleagues will go into that more, but basically what this does is it allows the corporations to directly sue governments. So they no longer need to get that government sponsor to take other governments to task for their regulations. So this new style of lawsuit under ISDS, Investor State Dispute Settlement, is a tactic used by the industry to create legal chill among governments. So they do some lawsuits directly. They don't even intend to win them. The idea is that that government has to spend millions of dollars defending their health regulation, and so they won't go further, and other countries, their neighbors, won't follow suit because they can't afford to do it. We already have plenty of evidence of legal chill from Canada and New Zealand, but we don't even know how much legal chill is out there because we can't know for sure why a government doesn't do something. They've admitted it's a tactic. This is a quote from the chairman of PMI, and I think the key word there is unreasonable, and they define unreasonable as any measure that would reduce their sales. So the reality of the U.S. trade negotiations is one of the problems we're up against here. This is an extremely secretive process. The text is secret. Even if you're a U.S. senator, you have to make an appointment to go down to the USTR's office. The USTR is the United States Trade Representative. Go downtown. They will put it in front of you. They'll confiscate your phone and your notebook. All you can do is memorize whatever you can, and they'll take the text back away from you. And that's for a U.S. senator. I've never seen any of the text except some examples that were leaked. The other thing about this is that our Constitution gives our Senate the constitutional authority to negotiate treaties. However, routinely, they give up that right to the presidency, to the White House, through something called fast track or trade promotion authority that basically says, go forth and negotiate this treaty, bring it back to us, and we will give it an up or a down vote. We do not get to argue over the details. The third problem is the USTR culture. The lawyers that work in the USTR come from and expect to go back to industry, tobacco industry and others. And so they are there. They are there to look after the interests of corporations, not the interests of public health or American citizens. Just quickly before I hand it over, we did bring a few documents that we have 30 or 40 copies of. They're down on this table now. One is co-authored by my colleague here, and it tracks the history of trade negotiations during the FCTC. Another is a letter written to the USTR by another colleague from the state of Maine asking the U.S. to please take this issue seriously. The third is an op-ed written by Mayor Bloomberg in August, helpfully telling the United States that they're doing the wrong thing on tobacco. And then the fourth is a letter that was written by the APHA supporting us in this effort. And so we're very happy to have their support and happy to be here. And we'll answer questions after this. Thank you.